I will go on in the same way, I hope, but a little bit on earth. Okay, so thank you. So I would like to speak a little bit about the Arctic, because we are already there somehow. I would like to think, to paint for you a little picture, because I want to know if you have heard about this research, the international research expedition that went into the Canadian Arctic Sea. And there were Russian participants in this expedition to find out about the Arctic, in this part of the Arctic, the Canadian part. And the Russian participants, they brought maps over the area that were better than the Canadian maps. So think about that. Somebody was there before. Of course, the Russians had been there with their submarines. So, have you heard about nuclear ballistic missiles, polar satellites, civilian air traffic routes? They all passed the Arctic. We are already there. Have you heard about the world's biggest icebreaker? It's called Typhoon. It was a Russian submarine that was designed to break up the ice from below the Arctic. The technology was a strategic flank to launch missiles from hiding places under the ice. So, why were the military, the space agencies, the air companies in the Arctic first? Because for them, it is normal to think outside the box. Why do we not normally think about Arctic space? Aren't our dimensions formed by what we see, what Bruce spoke about yesterday, what we see with our senses? And that is the land and the sea. So why don't we think about the space? So I would like to show you the first picture. Here we have the space, what we see. But why don't we think about this space, the space on the seabed, where there is a lot of things going on? What you see there is the exploration of gas and oil with the new technology, which is the automatic production systems on the seabed. So with science, you could see a new space. I think this is a wonderful picture of this idea of sense perception, and the, where you can see new things if you have science. A total new world. If you go on, this type of production operation is already in this area. Also, they are organized together with platforms like that. And if you look at how a field in the North Sea looks like, it's not only the platforms, it's also these underwater production sites, and then the pipelines between them, and then you have new systems. This is the new island in the to produce liquid natural gas in Melkøya in Norway. It's the first production in this area of the Barents Sea. So, just can we start the first animation? You can see how this production system functions today. This is here. Here we go. No, it's So there's, and here's another production site and a robot. And then you go up on the water. You see under the water the pipeline to this liquefied natural gas station in Melkøya. This is the Snow White field in the Barents Sea. It's the first production in the Arctic, in the European side of Arctic. And that is built by the Norwegians. If you look, so this is the production site, Melkøya, in the Barents Sea. And there you see the production where you produce the liquefied natural gas, and then you have this tanker, a special tanker, where you can transport the gas anywhere in the world from this place. So, how will you get anime? So, and here you see the pipeline system. This is the whole world under the water. Enormous pipeline systems in the whole North Sea. And if you see, it goes all the way up to the middle of Norway. So they are building the pipelines underwater. There is a whole new space under the water. So, is this Atlantic part of the Arctic? Well, if you look at this map, you can try to make a circle from and see the parts that compare these parts of the Arctic, that they correspond to Alaska. If you go around on the circle from Alaska, Anchorage, and then to Siberia, and then you have the whole area, you see that actually, the North Sea is part of the Arctic. And then if you make a circle, there is actually a circle on the south tip of Greenland. And then you go around, you see it's the same height as Anchorage. And then you go around, you have the whole northern Siberia. And then you end up on the same area, the southern tip of Greenland, you have Oslo, Stockholm, Helsinki, St. Petersburg. So this area is already in the Arctic. And then if you go a little, if you take the Canadian-American border and go around, you find that also the Ireland, Scotland, England, the whole Scandinavia, the northern part of the continent, the coast states of the North Sea and the Baltic Sea, they are all in this area. So actually, because of the Gulf Stream, a big chunk of Europe is actually part of the Arctic. And in this way, we should really see that we could be much more part of this. We are part of the Arctic. I would like to invite you into the Arctic in this way, that you are already there. So, but except for shipping and fishing, we do not integrate this Arctic space in our minds. So this is the problem, that we don't think about that we have a whole space, because what we look at is what we see. That's the land area, the fishing area, the sea. But we don't see this whole Arctic area we have. And it's already under work, not only in space, with the space science, with the military, but also we are very active in this area. And the Norwegians, since the first oil production started in the field Ekofisk, in the North Sea, have been in a constant self-feeding rush into the Arctic Sea. Why? Well, it's because they have to invest. If the income they have a policy, an economic policy, that if the income from the oil company, it's a big state-owned oil company called Statoil, if this is not invested, then the whole profit will end up put into the giant Norwegian oil fund, and then it's invested in some securities in the Caribbean, or stocks or paper. It's not used for any physical investment. So therefore, they have a system. The only way to really use the money is to use it inside the company, Statoil. So if you compare to a farmer that makes too much profit, he likes to invest in his farm. So he buys a new tractor. And then, of course, he has more profit, he buys another tractor. And then he has a lot of tractors, you know. But the Norwegians, they have a lot of oil platforms. Just because of this, because they are not allowed to invest in anything productive from all this oil money they get than into the oil exploration and gas exploration. So they have a whole self-feeding rush to get more and more production sites going. And that is what is going on. So now this is like an automatic machine working itself up more and more into the Arctic. And now they have the best technological skills in the world how to work in the Arctic Sea. They are the first to open up production in the hostile conditions of the Barents Sea. This is north of Norway. Actually, other oil companies like Gazprom, Eni, Total, the Alaskan oil companies, they have a similar self-feeding rush into to the Arctic too. But it's more like raw material companies that is stuck with their business, and then they concentrate on more and more exploration. So in this, they drive more and more into new areas like the Arctic. And this is one of the important drives into the Arctic that is going on just now. But beside that, we have the Russian Vernadsky impulse for colonization of the Arctic to expand the noosphere. So this is expressed in the very ambitious Russian Arctic plan presented by Prime Minister Vladimir Putin in the International Arctic Forum in Arkhangelsk. The Russian nation is in this way expressing sovereignty with this kind of expansion. And you can see in the things they are building now, like, this is the Norwegian expansion. Yes, let me show you. So you see Norway there and Scandinavia. You see that this is the areas which are Norwegian economic zones. And the green areas are those where the exploration is going on. That is the North Sea. It's already going all the way up until the middle of Norway. But then they're jumping over the area where the fishing is in a very narrow area outside Lofoten, Vesterålen. And then they can't, they have saved that part for exploration. So therefore they have made a big jump from there, from the middle of Norway up to the top of Norway. So now the oil exploration is in the green area above Norway, in the Barents Sea. So that's why they are already up there. And then you see, up north of that, that is Svalbard. That is also a big area that is open. And then to the left, the Jan Mayen area, that could also be open for oil exploration. So this is the Norwegian thrust into the north that you can see from this picture. And here are the other fields in the Barents Sea. So these are the Norwegian fields here, around here. And then here are the Russian fields. And the big discussion is about this Stockman field here, where the Russians are not really clear to take a decision. They should have taken the decision in the end of last year, but they postponed it till after the election, the presidential election. But they have already decided to develop this together with Gazprom and the French, Total. But, of course, it is the Norwegian technology. So the Norwegians are there already. And it's an alliance between Russia and France to develop this Stockman field. And then there are these other areas here in the Yamal, in the Kara Sea here, and other areas that are are about to be opened also. But the ones that are in production are the Snøhvit field here, and then the Golat field is now built. So the Norwegians are really already going in this area. So the Russian sovereignty, you can see this in this way. This is the new icebreaker that will be built, and this is the biggest icebreaker in the world, and it will be so strong that it can open up the North Sea route to north of Siberia the whole year. So it will be a very big icebreaker, and there will be a fleet of several of them being built now. You can also see the sovereignty in Russia, that they are the ones who actually are building now the first nuclear plant that is floating. And the platform is already launched in the sea. So now they are about to mount the two nuclear reactors, 35 megawatt reactors, that is the type that is used in the icebreakers. So now we have the... We can look at that first. So this is the thing that is driving into the Arctic, is this Russian sovereignty making themselves known in this way. The thing is that these are the drivers into the Arctic. It's the national state projects, very important. It's the military, very important, and the raw material companies. So that is what is now going into the space, into the Arctic. However, there are problems here, which Lionel LaRouche has foreseen long ago, when he, in the book, The Earth Next 50 Years, discussed the development of a true Eurasian culture. He wrote, throughout this time, European civilization has been less populous by a relatively great margin than Asian culture. Yet the power expressed by the European civilization has been greater, especially since the rise of classical Greek culture, since no later than approximately the 7th century before Christ. This has to do essentially with the special nature of man, especially the related induced self-image of the typical individual member of society. This portends to a potential catastrophe in Asia, even in those nations which are emerging as relatively great world powers, unless the image of man as reflected in the condition of the great mass of poor is upgraded from the status of cheap labor to an intellectually enlightened, creatively innovative mass of the population. This task becomes obviously a crucial problem in the context of any global discussion of matters of a dialogue of culture. So this is the problem Lynn posed in this book, and he discussed it very much in this book. You can pose the question in another way. Where is the middle class in the Arctic development? If you look in these projects, and should the middle class transport themselves and the goods via the pipelines? So you have an oligarchical problem in the Arctic just now. It's a brutal life and death issue just now, actually, for people that are about to work there. We now have a mining boom in the north of Sweden, with a couple of thousands of new jobs being created in new mines there. But we see the problem, even in Sweden, with this type of living conditions, like this new worker. If you can start the film, Mattia. So here is a reporter coming to interview the new worker. No? Here's the new worker living. And this is the new worker, the new mine worker, invited to take part in the Arctic development. That's all. So this is the problem. they are not getting the housing even. We can also see the problem with the lack of infrastructure development. We have a new mine being opened in the area of Pajala. It's in the very north of Sweden, in the Lapland. And normally you have a train, and you see this mine train with this enormous load behind it, with an endless row of cargo of iron ore. But in this area, they are not building rail. So can you start the next film? You see how they will solve it. They will bring 6 million tons of iron ore here on this main road. So on this main road, they will bring trucks, 90-ton trucks, every 6 minutes. And this reporter is now telling about this thing, that this guy living in this house out will have this every 6 minutes, 90-ton trucks drive all the way. So they will drive 150 kilometers between Pajala and Svappavaara. It takes 5 hours to go back and forth this way, on this road. So, I think that's enough. So, even in the welfare state of Sweden, the mine workers are treated like cattle, and the infrastructure is not developed. So, this is the problem of mining companies. Have you heard about the human mining company? Have you been longing for a job in the salt mines? This is one problem. The other problem is with the indigenous peoples in the Arctic. The Sami, the others. Do you know where Greenland is? It's in Oslo. It's the slum area close to the railway station. It's called Greenland. That's where the Greenlanders live, or used to live. So people are treated like cattle by the oligarchs in the Arctic. So against this, we have the science cities. And we have all seen Sky Shields present the UMCA science city, where you can see what the human needs are in Arctic, where you can have a decent living, where you can have a family life. And the Western European unique contribution to the Arctic must be to develop the scientific mind for all in the Arctic, not only for the typical East European class of intellectuals or specialists that are in the science cities. How should we upgrade the poor from the status of cheap labor? So, everywhere, for instance, we have the situation where each new mine will meet some kind of original people living in that area, and indigenous people. So this will make a confrontation everywhere, in the typical way we have had all the time in these areas. So how can you sort out these problems? Well, you should know one of the big problems in this area is the safety infrastructure. Normally, you don't think of an ambulance as infrastructure. But in this area, without the rescue systems, you cannot be there. So the whole safety infrastructure defines the space for the human activities in this area. And actually, those people living there, they could be recruited to take part in this kind of rescue systems. So what we should do with this kind of people is to bring them the helicopters and bring them the communication and health service to all these peoples and recruit them to become a backbone for the rescue and safety service, because they are already a spearhead for populating the Arctic. So this is the thing we should do, is to supply the population with higher energy density and science. And if you look at the workers, you can look, we were discussing moon mining. This is the same way we should organize the mining in the bottom of the sea or in the bottom of the mine pits with the highest technology, which forces the advancement of education, welfare, and salaries of the labor force. So I would like you to see this picture here. This is in the modern mine. But where is the truck driver? Can you see the truck driver? Well, he's here. That's where the truck driver is. And he's driving 5 trucks. I don't know how many hands he has, but he's actually driving 5 trucks. So this is the way to organize, to uplift the population. Then we should build every new mining city as the model science cities, with the decent living, decent houses, and close communication with national and educational cultural facilities. Then you can have this type of labor, educated, knowing all the new things that comes up in the technology, and then he needs a good culture to function in this scientific way. And in this way, you create the new science city also for the labor. So to promote this development, we should promote the research and knowledge for the raw materials processing and refining, as well as bioprospecting, to develop a Mittelstand industry, a middle class. So the way to bring in the creative development on a broad base is to organize the situation so that you get the middle class up in the area. Actually, yesterday, Paul told me about Greenland. In Greenland, there is a lot of middle class industry from Denmark, but it's the industry that Danes know, not mining. They know fishing industry, they know this kind of things that are work with shipping and the sea. And therefore, there are a lot of small businessmen from Denmark in Greenland working with the biggest production of shrimps in the world, actually. So this is a good example how we can bring in industry that are on a broader level into this area. But to promote this kind of development, we need to see how these raw materials can be processed and not just being brought out there with the big companies, oil companies and so on. And therefore we should populate the Svalbard University Center. We should populate the Arctic universities in Tromsø, in Akureyri, as you know, in Iceland, in Nuuk, the University of Nuuk in Greenland, in Umeå. It sounds almost as strange, but it's in Sweden. Oulu, it's in Finland. And Arkhangel has an Arctic university. And also, of course, the new science city, UMCA, is very important for everyone to take part in as a way to start to develop this kind of Mittelstand. Then we should organize the transport, not only for bulk transport, but for middle-class industry. This means we need high-speed railways to the north. We need to use the national control of the raw material exploration to develop the infrastructure inroads to the Arctic, like into Norway, into northern Finland, into northern Russia. And therefore, we need to really break this monetarist non-investment policy in Denmark, Sweden and Finland. We should all open up the transport links to the north from continental Europe. And so this is the Svalbard science satellite station. So that is actually a science city already in Svalbard. But these are the transport. We should open up these corridors. So let me just point to some of them. We have the Fehmarn Bridge, which is very important because this is part of the... it joins up with the Nordic Triangle. It is between Copenhagen, Oslo, Stockholm, and Helsinki, and actually St. Petersburg also. So this is the European project to build this. But in this way, with the Fehmarn, you are all the way up to Oslo, and actually the Norwegians are now the leading in Scandinavia to discuss high-speed trains. They are about to start some kind of high-speed train, just now discuss rail, but not magnetic. But we try to convince them for magnetic trains. Then you have this green thing here. That is the Rail Baltica. It is from Berlin, Warsaw, up to the Baltic states. And then you have the new tunnel that is already planned and discussed, but not, of course, no money, between Tallinn and Helsinki. And if you see that, you are in one day all the way up to Finland. Otherwise, you will have to go by sea from Finland to Germany or Poland. So that means you have a whole new shortcut to Finland just by this Rail Baltica and the tunnel Tallinn Helsinki. Then you have the Botnian corridor, mm-hmm. which is on the left side. This is the new railway that is built along the coast, because we had an old discussion in Sweden in the 19th century to build not close to the coast but inland. So therefore they now want to build close to the coast. New railways. But also you have the Northern Arc, which is the bottom of the bay of the Baltic Sea, going from Sweden into Finland. This little part is called the Nordic Arc. And that would connect a very highly industrial area. But the problem is that this area has no connection to the Arctic. So we need now new railways. We have the railway to Narvik, which is the old iron mine railway. But we need to build a new railway either this way up on an old road I can show you here, actually. Here, this. So this is the Nordic Arc. And so this is not built, and it could be built quite fast, because here we have the Murmansk Railway, and then we have an old railway that was torn down because of the war, and it's still not there. So this could be built quite fast. But this is the Via Baltica also, in another. But here you see another new railway being discussed from Finland. Not this one I pointed to before, but this straight up to the top of Norway. And that is to Kirkenes from Rovaniemi. Because in this area here, Sodankyle, they have found a lot of iron mines. Mining. It's copper and nickel and also gold. So they need to transport. So they need a new railway. So the idea is that you normally would transport it down, but actually it gets closer up here, and here you are on the North Sea route, and that means that you can transport the ore to China, Japan, quite easily if you get to there. And here is the railway that is missing, where they will bring the trucks instead. So this is where we need a railway also. But then they discussed to build from there also a new railway to Skibotn, that it would be a harbor here. But very importantly, this is Tromsø, which is kind of the capital of the northern Norway. And here is the railway is ending here. So they are discussing to continue the Norwegian railway up here, either through Sweden or straight on to Tromsø. So these are the new railways being discussed for northern Norway. And then we have also on the Russian side, we have here the possibility to build these railways together with this north-east-west corridor, where you bring the from China all the way to the United States via the Arctic, the transport. And here you have the Trans-Siberian Railway, but if you normally you go here to St. Petersburg and then up here and then to Narvik, or but then they are building this have decided to build the Belkomur Railway. So that would be a shortcut up here, up to Arkhangelsk and then up. So that is the other big possibility to. So there are a lot of discussions and planning already done for all these kind of projects, but they have not decided because we have this monetarist policy of non-investment. So what we should do is to build these things and also to answer the Russian, the Norwegian and Greenland invitation to participate in this project. There are new mines being opened up in Greenland, new mines in these areas, all this Arctic development, and also cooperate with China, South Korea, Japan, India, Canada and the United States according to this motto they have now. It's the high north, low tension. That is to work together. The Norwegian Foreign Minister Jonas Gahr Støre underlines very much that there is no race for the Arctic because all borders are actually settled. Therefore, there is no rush for the resources in competition with each other, but a common rush for knowledge, he says. That is the concept of the Norwegians. So let me just show you what Jonas Gahr Støre said this week. On Wednesday, they launched the new Arctic, policy for Norway. And Norway is very much connected, the state and the oil company, so it's a national policy to really invite you to this area. So, can we play Jonas Gahr Støre? He is now, he's the foreign minister of Norway, and he launched this presentation Wednesday this week. Should we hear it? Yeah, hear the sound.
We look around us and see that it is really in the north that most is changing close to us. We have to take part in global changes, but this is really a change coming very close to us, and there are three main drivers of that change. One is that our neighborhood with Russia is changing after the Soviet Union broke up. We're going to develop and redevelop new and long-term relations with our neighbor. Secondly, we observe climate change, which has significant impact on the natural environment, but also opening up new sea lanes for shipping, changing transport routes in the north. And third, this is a region with abundant resources, renewable resources such as fish, but also non-renewable resources, minerals, oil and gas. All this put together makes this an area which really deserves attention and priority and strategy, and that's why we have defined it as the priority of Norwegian foreign policy. We see in international media often quoted that there's a race for the Arctic. I would counter that. Most of the resources in the Arctic are well within the boundaries of coastal states, economic zones, or continental shelves. There are no major disputes concerning borders. Norway and Russia sorted out its border issues after 40 years of negotiation on the delimitation in the Barents Sea and the Polar Sea. And we have ample elements to build on when we structure our cooperation to handle issues. Most of these problems, we have to make each other part of the solution rather than part of the problem. So this race analogy, I would rather take that it's a race for knowledge, for understanding, and for mastering these areas in a responsible way. I believe there are two sets of challenges. First, it is important in the North that we agree on the legal foundations for cooperation and operation. That is pretty much settled, because in the North, in the Arctic, we agree that the UN Foundation of the Law of the Sea applies as a key foundation for regulating policies. All the coastal states, Russia, Norway, Denmark, Greenland, Canada and the US, agree on these principles, and that's now widely spread. Second, when you have that legal foundation, you need to intensify political cooperation. And that is being strengthened through the Barents Sea Cooperation and through the Arctic Council Cooperation. That has been a remarkable progress in recent years, and Norway has actively been contributing to that. The Arctic Council's permanent secretariat will be located in Tromsø in the north of Norway, and that's a welcome development. And thirdly, we have to define our national priorities. What does this mean and entail in terms of research, development, industrial policies, maritime policies, and also geopolitics? Because this is an area where there is a lot of interest from many states, and Norway, as a member of NATO, as a European partner and a Nordic neighbor, will develop and clarify its own identity as a northern coastal state.
Just one picture. If you close that. So we have this picture. This is also the sensational news from February this year. If you looked at these pictures, these are each year the ice in the north, in the Arctic. Now this year you have the low corner here. This is this year's. And if you see here, the ice is already all the time here in this Kara Sea. But this year, there is no ice in the Kara Sea. So what we can do now is to see that the Kara Sea is open. It's like our forefathers was 10,000 years following the retreating ice. Let's go to the Arctic coast, not the Baltic coast. Thank you.